Hey there, just a quick mild warning. In the very last segment of the show, so say the last 4.5 minutes or so, we talk about a word that is an epithet for a child whose parents are not married. You probably know what the word is, but I wanted to warn you because it's often not considered a very nice word, and some of you may not want to hear about that, which is perfectly reasonable. So that's the last 4.5 minutes or so of the show after we talk about the word perilous. So when we're done with that, you could just hit stop if that's not something that you want to hear, or you could continue on and hear that discussion too. Okay, thanks. Let's do it. From KMUW Wichita,
from Toronto, Ontario,
and from Armenia, Spain,
this is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about what happens when we try and reach the heights. Oof, did any of that give you the heebie-jeebies? We're about to get into it. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello there, Ross. You are there at your home in Toronto. Kathy, hi. You're there at your home, of course, in Armenia. And we're going to kick off today with a little discussion of a funny little word that kind of causes people some problems. You know, we're always talking about volume here on the show, length, width, and height.
Ooh,
Fletcher!
Brilliant.
Yeah, was it? Like how I backed
yes,
into that.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, we got a letter from one of our listeners about exactly this thing. Not volume, really. He didn't care that much about capacity and what's going on there. But more the word height.
That's the word.
Tell us what he said.
Okay, we got an email from Duff in California, Belvedere, who said, "Hi guys, here's another one for you," i.e. pet peeve. Oh, incidentally, let me interject. We have a ton of pet peeves, but we still love getting them.
Oh,
so
sure.
If you've got more.
And we're going to do a special show or a couple of shows on.
At this point, we're going to like 3 weeks
worth. We have
worth.
So many.
But anyway, he said, "Hi guys, here's another one for you. I hear lots of people pronounce height as though it ended with TH, as in length and width. Have you encountered this?"
Yes, Duff, we have. And actually, you gave a clue to the grammatical structure when you said length and width. The TH ending in terms of abstract nouns or measurement nouns, etc., is very common. And Kathy, you know some people who say height as well, don't you?
My mother-in-law, she's 99, lives in Alaska, but she's originally from rural California. And she's a height person. She says height all the time. And I've noticed my husband sometimes says it. And I correct him. I don't like height. I like height. But he says it not all the time, but every now and then I catch Randy going something about the height. But he usually mumbles it so I don't hear it.
And actually, Fletcher, because this is sort of interesting. It seems to be the TH ending is very common, and it was used. It was what's called a productive ending. It was used commonly in Old English and Middle English to form nouns of quality. Breadth, length, yeah. we said, etc. And of course, you know, it's coolth outside. Warmth has maintained itself. Coolth does not exist anymore. And one theory, and it seems very plausible, is that height survives because it's sort of like fossilized English. In effect, people came across the seas or whatever, or they live in certain more isolated areas, and they kept the old pronunciation. Which leads to one quick question. Do people say that in Kansas at all?
Height?
Almost certainly. Here's the thing. When we're talking about, if we're talking about length and width, and then I say height, that does not bother me in the slightest. Like, I would bet if I'm talking about length and or width, and then I also have to mention height, I would bet that I stop for a second and try to figure out whether I'm supposed to say height or height. I like because it sort of primes me saying length and width.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if I were just talking about the height of something, I would never say height.
Say
like
height.
If it were just on its own.
As a standalone, you wouldn't.
Here's what I wonder, Kathy. The people you know who do say height, would they say that they are afraid of heights? Probably not.
No,
right?
I think that possibly Joy, Randy's mom, would. Randy
oh, really?
Would not.
Oh, really?
I think, see, yeah. But I think in her case, it's like you had said, Ross, that it's like a lot of it's from like early settlers. She, her family came over here like in the early. They were here in 1700s, I guess 1700s, to the United States. And I'm wondering, and then they went from Pennsylvania all the way west and settled ultimately in California. So I'm wondering if it is one of those things where a small group of people, a small community, just keeps up the pronunciation.
I see what you're saying, Kath, but I'm going to counter you, which is something Fletcher said. Kath and I were discussing this, and I basically felt that it's probably what we said before, fossilized English, and what Kathy just said before, how it, you know, like from a settler's mm-hmm. into a rural area, whatever. But when Fletcher, Kathy, in effect, maybe countered you a little bit, I said there's another possibility that maybe it's a natural tendency, and sometimes it comes back to height.
Okay, so like, I'm just said, trying to think. He said width, length, height, you'd say.
Height. Yeah, and you're
width,
just like,
length,
basically,
height.
It's
no,
natural.
No, I wouldn't. See, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'm not being cantankerous. I don't
think you are.
Yeah.
I think you're basically saying it. I think I wouldn't either, but when Fletcher said it, it really interested me. So maybe is there like a natural tendency for us to sometimes do it too? Could that be also one reason why people are doing it? I don't know. I have no idea.
Doesn't it feel like a little something's missing? Look, I'm not saying that I say height. I don't know if I ever do, if I'm mm-hmm. talking about length and width. But when you talk about mm-hmm. length, width, and height, doesn't it seem like there's a little something
yeah.
missing if you don't say height?
It does, length, sort of. I didn't height. Think of it until you said it.
I don't feel it. I understand it intellectually,
okay.
but I don't feel that.
Okay.
I don't feel it. Yeah. The thing that got me, and this actually sounds slightly moronic on my part, is I didn't realize how... It's never occurred to me the TH ending, this productive ending, added on to things like long or girth, would mm-hmm. I assume came from gird
yeah.
or something, or girdle, or depth, deep, depth. I don't think I really thought about
it's
it.
It's pretty cool.
You know?
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. One problem with not thinking about it, though, is that there's what's called, we've said this before, ablaut. It's a vowel change in the center. Like, height doesn't really change, but like filth, for example, comes from foul, and the vowel changes when you put the TH
oh, wow.
on it.
Yeah,
heel
deep
becomes
depth.
Health. Yeah, deep depth. And as I said before, cool and cool. Sometimes it doesn't change.
Ross,
and you don't even
just
say.
Just let it go, Ross.
But I like some of them. I like damp, too.
Here's my question. Why did height... I mean, I assume height existed as a word. Why
yes.
did it drop the TH? Why is it height now? When we've got all these others that maintained it.
But a bunch of others didn't. Like Ross said, coolth, dampth, chillth.
Yeah.
Those
yeah.
those got rid of the TH.
But
yeah.
those are just way different now. Height, all it did was turn into a T sound instead of a TH.
Well, I'm going to give you a really bad answer
okay.
that we've
that's,
discovered.
That's, yeah, it, that's
basically, what seems to have happened was the TH... came to be pronounced for reasons unknown as a T in Northern England.
Okay.
And they said it became standard.
Uh-huh.
And they also add, but, you know, it became standard for many similar TH words. And then they have, quote, but not for many others, like width, depth, et cetera.
Yeah. Okay, this makes sense given everything else we've ever talked about English. I completely get it.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking at the OED, and the older heights are TH endings.
Yeah.
Not HT endings.
I just can't help it, though. I really love chilth and coolth. Actually, on that side of, like, getting rid of the TH, chilth and coolth, just try to say them. They're not very easy to say.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Depth is easy.
Yeah.
Filth is easy. You know, the chilth of the day, it just is horrible. You can't say it. That I can see. The height, I guess, followed the same pattern where height was easier.
Although you had both height and height coexisting for a long, long time.
Oh, sure.
I mean, that's what gets me. And I, why did height win?
I don't know.
Interesting. Thank you, Duff.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Interesting.
That's one that drives me crazy. Speaking of people pronouncing things, how do you say that word?
Interesting.
You just said interesting.
I say interesting. Yeah.
Interesting.
I say interesting as well. I know many, including my husband, who say interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting. No, mine's a TR, intra. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. It's interesting.
I lied everything into it. Actually, one interesting word was youth. Youth was originally youth.
Youth?
Oh, from young?
Yeah. Youth.
Ooh,
then it became youth. Some of these are really hard to say. I just keep wondering about that, if that was one of the real reasons.
Yeah, sure.
It's a little bit hard for English speakers to say.
Uh-huh.
Okay, moving along, we have another pet peeve. Hi, Fletcher. I've been listening to the podcast for a long while, and I love it. Thank you. Many thanks to you, Kathy and Ross, and especially for Ross. Oh, that's not in the letter. And the team for making it. It's a highlight when I see a pop of my head. Now for the pet peeves.
Okay.
First, try and try to.
Oh.
This has been going on for years, and I wonder if it's too far gone to reverse, but it bothers me greatly when someone says or writes they will try and do something, when it should be try to do something. To me, try and means you're both trying, trying what is unclear, and separately doing something, whereas try to means you're trying to do something.
What? How do you feel about that, Fletcher? Does that bother you, try and versus try to?
Nah, I think maybe once upon a time it might have bothered me a little more. I seem to remember reading or hearing somewhere that even Jane Austen said something like this. And so, you know, it's one of those things where knowing that it goes back way further than I might have thought otherwise,
I'm looking. There's a lot of try ands. Yeah. Back
we're
going
to try and explain this to you, Fletcher. And we do have Thackeray, George Eliot, Dreiser, and Hemingway.
Yeah.
E.B. White as well, who wrote, didn't he co-write that book on grammar? And the New York Times, all of her saying try and. And we're going to start with actually Merriam-Webster, which says it is correct as a usage, although they seem to imply that it might be best to, it's not quite as flexible, mm-hmm. but it is seen as correct. There's not necessarily a strict thing that all infinitives have to have true in front of it. Two in front of it. I mean, not true. Two.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I have no problem with try and. In fact, I think I say try and more than try to. I'm just thinking when I speak. I'm going to try and do it. I'm going to try to do it. No, I say try to.
Try to do it.
But I say try to.
But we do. For example, go and ask them with go and come. Mm-hmm. Come and see what I'm going to say right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Wait. Could you guys wait and let me finish? I mean, right there. It wasn't a good acting, I thought.
Good acting, Ross. Yeah. You should star with me in my Humphrey Bogart show.
I think if you want to get really, really like literal with, you know, picking out every single word, go and do something, come and do something, wait and do something. They are two different things. I mean, you're asking us to wait and let you do something. Two different things. Wait. And also let you do something, right? When you say try and do something, the try doesn't seem to apply to anything particularly.
I see what you're saying, actually. I mean,
I agree that it makes perfect sense and it doesn't really bother me. But when you like pick out every little word, the try, like wait and let me finish can both stand on their own. Wait, I want you to wait, and also let me finish.
Try and
fix this. Those aren't two different things, right?
No.
Also, but again, here's the Times one. Carrie, she says, is working hard to try and win a scholarship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's trying to win a scholarship. Like those aren't two separate things, right?
No, they're the same thing.
Right. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Like when you pick out every little word. The try, there is something specific about the try and mm-hmm. that doesn't apply to the others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but what about wait and let me finish?
Those are two different
things. Because you're saying wait
yes.
is one thing. Wait, Ross. Now let me finish.
Yeah, and.
He's saying that could be two discrete units.
Yes, do two things.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I guess you're right.
I think that's an interesting point, actually.
Okay, go and ask them. Here you're going to specifically ask them.
No,
you're not saying
you're going. You're going and
then you're going to ask them. Yeah, I see what Fletcher's saying.
If
actually.
I said try and ask them, those aren't two different things. It's just try to ask them. If I say go and ask them, you're doing two things. You're going and you're asking them.
But when you're trying, hold up one second, though. What you're
trying,
you're
what?
Trying to ask them. Yeah, I guess you're right, actually.
No, I think it's actually a very interesting distinction. I don't think it matters.
No,
but,
no. Let me agree with that wholeheartedly. I also don't think it matters.
Yeah.
Although the recommendation the Merriam-Webster makes is it's somewhat informal in tone, but none of them are non-standard, which I would agree with. I think it's I'm not sure I would write this in a book, despite what William Makepeace Thackeray did. I think I would use the proper infinitive.
I don't know if I would or not. I think that it's one of those things where if I'm writing it, who knows what I'm going to do. You know?
I think we'll have to wait and see.
Try and convince me, Ross. The thing that interested me is that they both, both versions, both iterations are roughly the same time. In fact, Try and might be older. They're not quite sure. But Try and Try Two came about around the same time in the 16th century when they first started using try meaning attempt. And so they both have coexisted all along.
Yeah.
Although in terms of in Fletcher's defense, not defense, but in the point is, I wonder if to try, though, was to try to was even back then seen as more standard, because to try to is much more flexible. For example, you cannot use it like in an inflected form. They tried to explain. They tried and explain doesn't work. You can't
No,
split
you cannot.
It.
You're right.
Try
you're
harder
right.
to explain. Try harder and explain. It seems very different.
Yeah.
And you can't try not to fall. Try not and fall. Try not, you know, it doesn't
try
work.
Try and not fall. No.
No.
Is it me? Wait a second now. I'm just listening. Try and, it seems to me, is best when you do it in the present tense, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Can you do it in the past tense?
No, not
he
really.
He tried and explained.
No, you wouldn't really. You wouldn't
no, it
say
doesn't
that.
Really work.
It, Fletcher's separation becomes glaring there. He tried and explained is terrible.
And the only one I'm saying is in the Thackeray, the Duke of Wellington had gone to try and rally, but that's still not really a past tense.
Right.
No.
Not that part of it. Yeah.
No.
I don't like that sentence, though, anyway.
That's a bad sentence. I never was crazy about Thackeray, to be honest with you. I read Vanity Fair, and I found it very boring, but I read it when I was like 12, so, you know.
Yeah. I read it on the train in Turkey, believe it or not, and I didn't like it particularly, but whatever.
Well, so ultimately, both versions have been around for a very long time, and it's not seen as non-standard, although possibly a little more informal to say try and.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Nice summation.
Yes. Now, moving along, we have, and this one I feel very strongly about, and I hope all of you
good.
Do. I think Kathy does too. Could of, would of, OF, should of.
Yeah.
This has been going on for years, and I will die on this hill. Well, at least I'm up there with you on that hill.
Kristen from Colorado. We have to get her in there, Kristen.
What does would of, could of, or should of even mean?
You know what? Okay, so here's something. I've had various people in my life who know a lot of words, but occasionally mispronounce some of those words. More like the spelling pronunciation would be, right? And you can tell that those people have read a lot in their lives because they know the words, they're using them correctly, but they're pronouncing them the way they would pronounce them if they'd never really heard anybody say them out loud. I wonder if this is sort of the opposite of that, because it should be like would have, right? But when we're speaking, we say like would've, apostrophe V-E. So if you're somebody who's never really done a lot of reading, you've heard people say would have, you would naturally assume that it's would space OF, would of, right? So I was just wondering if it's kind of the flip side of those people who read a lot, but maybe haven't heard the word said. Maybe these are people who haven't read as much and are just, I think, understandably assuming that it is this way.
I think that's a very apt description of the situation.
Yeah. It's still super annoying. Don't get me wrong. I really don't like it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I think we're all the same case. We're all on that one. I don't like, I mean, would of, I say all the time. I don't write would of, and I would hope I never do. But Kathy, I thought you found that great thing with the papers of Thomas Jefferson, though. I was amazed on that.
Oh, I don't want to do, I just want to say first, before that, if you don't mind, Ross, the fact that obviously you shouldn't do the of is a preposition, not a verb, and you're using it as a verb, and that's wrong. But this is the thing that got me, is it's so common that in 2004, the OED added an entry for of as an auxiliary verb.
Oh my.
Yeah, see that I don't like. That I don't like. I know these are like descriptive dictionaries that describe what people are doing. But there are limits, I think, to description.
It's just like, for God's sake.
I know. That's
humanity.
Not a good description. I think that I don't think it should be. They say, I mean, to be fair, the OED says it's a variant arising from misapprehension of the verb. And I think they're right. It's a misapprehension, and it's such a big misapprehension that it should be banned. I don't like writing that.
Yeah. The thing that really got us, as Ross was saying, is it's been around for a long time. This is not, it's not one of those things where a lot of times people decry social media or whatever and say, you know, everybody's gotten so sloppy. People have been sloppy with that of for centuries, yeah. Centuries.
I just wanted to bring up the letter that we're talking about is, I think it's from Kristen. We were talking about the OF, the should of, and so on. We got another letter, though, from Stan, who was bothered by apostrophe VE. He says, irrespective of how it's spoken, it used to be customary. Yeah, it used to be customary to spell out would have. Now, however, one sees everywhere would've, meaning W-O-L-D, apostrophe V-E, should've, could've, etc., spelled out in instances, which are not local color nor quoting speech, such as informal, newsy, informative writing. So Stan doesn't like the apostrophe VE, which I find really interesting. You know,
I'd forgotten that. I wish we
should have talked about that. That wouldn't bother me at all when writing dialogue.
That would not bother me at all, Ross.
yes. I don't think, though, that, you know, the feeling of the department is that we should have done this.
Nah,
I would have written
whatever.
I would have written should have.
I don't mind contractions. I don't mind contractions anywhere. They're fine with me.
Yeah, I'm a contraction.
No matter
person.
Whether you're in formal writing or whatever, like that's just, it's fine.
I don't know your standard tax form. Let's talk about it. So.
I would love to have a little more of like a little more relaxed language in it. Are you kidding? Maybe I could understand it. Stop paying an accountant.
But none of us like should of. No. I don't think. No. I think that one is a little bit too much. I think that's a bridge too far for dictionaries, I think, on that one. And I love this statement. They call it non-standard, which I think is lexicographical speak for. You will get corrected by the grammar police if you use this. But it's in here because people do use it. Right. I think that's like the sum of that one.
Yeah. I see it a lot, though, I must say. I see ofs cropping up all over the place.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, I think when most people do, including these ones that we found, most of the times when we found it in print, it was in letters. And I have a feeling that, I mean, sometimes I've done that. I mean, we all do it. We do sound pronunciation and we just write quickly.
You're typing fast.
Yeah. And I think in that sense, it probably is more of that than anything else.
I did love this one we found in a letter dated May 26, 1813, in the papers of Thomas Jefferson. It was more than. Not than,
ooh.
Too. We could have asked of you.
What?
It was more than we could have. But it wasn't Thomas Jefferson.
It was his brother.
It was his brother Randolph.
We were so excited for a bit.
Randolph. Get it together, man.
Randolph actually seemed kind of like not Thomas Jefferson, really. He was prone to talk. He talked about touching things instead of touching them. He was always touching.
Yeah.
And then a biographer of Jefferson said that he was smart, but his intelligence was underestimated due to his rustic sense of humor. I'm not touching that one. But then we found it Charlotte Bronte, but again, it was a letter, said, would he have spoken? Would he have spoken?
Wow.
That should have been, would he have spoken?
Yeah, wow.
No, I don't like those. And someone said on a blog we had found, it's not an error, it's a horror. I think it's true. I don't think we could do put any better than that. Anyway, moving along, we're going to do back into words again, Fletcher. And these are words that sound alike, but are they related to? Okay, ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, venison, benison. So like schmaltzy, baltzy. Venison, benison.
Venison, benison. What was the second word?
Benison, B-E-N-I-S-O-N. It could be an alternative spelling. It could be a different word.
I don't even know
could
what
be
a,
nothing.
I don't even know what a benison is.
Okay, what's venison then?
Venison is deer meat, right?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so venison and benison. Well, I know what one of those words is, and I do not know what the other one is, so I'm going to say
okay,
they
just
are...
think about, what does venison sound like to you, though? Just think about benison. What are other words that have a bena sort of sound?
That's a good way to do it.
Benefit, benediction.
Close. So let's say we can say the priest gave his benediction or benison to the people.
Oh.
Did that mean he gave them deer meat to the people
meat.
Or something else?
They're not related.
They're not. Benediction is correct, too.
Oh, really?
That was a good hint, Kathy. Yes. It's benison is literally benediction.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And it comes from the Latin benedictionem, which came into French benison, which became venison in English.
Hmm.
And venison came from venari, to hunt and pursue.
Oh, was venison less specific once upon a time?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, it could
cool.
be wild animal with game.
Yeah.
It was just large game.
Yeah.
You could have had boar meat, and it would have been venison. As well.
I was fascinated with the word benison because, as I told you, Rose, when I suggested this one, I kept cropping up in my book. They kept talking about
so
it was quite a benison.
It
I'd never seen that word before in my life.
Here's one that Kathy found, which is really interesting for one reason. Parlous and perilous.
Parlous.
P-A-R-L-O-U-S and perilous. P-E-R-I-L-O-U-S.
Yeah. Is parlous, does that have something to do with talking a lot?
Ooh, interesting.
Parlous.
Very interesting. So you're saying they're not related, parlous and perilous.
Well, I didn't say that.
Kathy, now, when you just you left on that and you can't.
I got excited, Ross.
I know.
I guess I don't really know what parlous means, but something tells me maybe they're related, I guess.
Yeah, something does tell us that.
Kathy tells us that.
This was really interesting because I knew that we both knew they were related, but we didn't realize how they were related. Perilous, which means full of danger, as you well know, and parlous, which means dangerous and alarming the same way, both come from the Latin word periculosis, which means dangerous or hazardous, which is periculum, danger, etc. But Kathy and I both thought parlous would have been the older word, and it isn't.
Hmm.
It's a late Middle English contraction of perilous.
Oh, wow.
So it's the slangy perilous.
Yeah.
It's the would have of perilous, if you will.
And we both always encounter parlous in sort of hoity-toity writing.
Oh, how funny.
So
yeah.
I thought it was the far older word, as did Kathy.
Yeah, absolutely. That shocked me. I'm still stunned.
I know.
Okay, the next group, the next doublet.
Okay, we come now to one of our favorites because we both thought this was interesting. I don't know why. We both like the word. Bastinado and bastard.
Wow. Yes, absolutely they're related. I don't know what bastinado is, but I like it.
I like the word. We all like it.
It's bastinado is one of those. Bastinado means a beating with a cudgel. It's especially on the soles of the feet as torture or punishment.
Oh, goodness.
Which came
gracious.
From the Spanish bastonava, a beating or cudgeling, from baston, stick, from the late Latin bastum, as in baton. Whereas bastard...
completely different. Illegitimate
no
child. Old French bastard. Acknowledged child of a noble woman. A noble man by a woman other than his wife.
Uh-huh.
Modern. And it comes, they think, from fils de bast, pack saddle son. But no one is really sure. Saddles often doubled as beds while traveling. And they had the, quote, pejorative ending, ard, A-R-D, or art, A-R-T.
Huh.
And then they have an interesting thing. I don't know how to pronounce this in German, but bankling this bastard, a child born, begotten on a bench versus the barrage bed.
Wow.
Which came into English as bantling, or a brat or a small child.
I didn't know bastard was not always regarded as a stigma. I'm reading this right. I didn't say that. I'm reading it. I didn't know William the Conqueror was called William the Bastard in State Talk. I did not know that.
Yeah, apparently, it was descriptive to some degree. And
I also didn't know it was specifically child of a nobleman.
That's a big
woman
deal.
Other than his wife.
That's a big deal, because I was looking, I got sort of interested in the topic, and I don't quote me on any of this because I didn't write it down, but apparently that was fairly common. The idea of illegitimacy was like specific, when you think about it would make sense, specifically for people like nobility,
yeah,
where it really mattered if you're going to inherit anything or not.
As long as you don't get bastinadoed.
Yes.
Sorry. There's something about that word. Go on, Ross.
Oh, the only problem, I just checked here. We should probably do more research on this. The only problem is, here's a quote. He was regularly described as bastardus, bastard, in non-Norman contemporary sources. So William the Conqueror was a Norman.
Right.
So my presumption is that the non-Normans are the people calling him a bastard. I'm not sure, like you go, hi, king, you bastard.
Hey, and you're gonna get away with it. It's Bill the Bastard. Yay.
So I think it probably still maintained somewhat of a
pejorative.
Yeah, I don't think it was too popular. I'm not sure we would have gotten away with it calling him that. That was the one interesting word, though, because I didn't know. It was one of those words that, and we all have them, that words that sort of float around our consciousness, not quite sure what they mean. Did you have that with Bastard? I'd heard it before.
I always think of it as Italian and something to do with music or opera or something.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought of it more as like a not a good thing, basically.
Oh, really? I didn't think of it as a bad thing. I thought, like, you know, now we'll have the fanfare and the bastinado.
That's interesting.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.